The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Saturday morning, everybody, day before St. Patrick's Day. It's March 16th, 2024. 710 KNUS Weather Center weather, high 40s today, and then much the same tomorrow. And then the sun comes back Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Easter, Passover, and Ramadan. Now, if you read how many people in this is research that Christianity and Judaism and Islam are the three most practiced religions in this country. And each religion celebrates its major holiday this time of year. And why? A longtime friend, he's a cultural anthropologist. We've done work together, and he wrote a really extensive paper on this. And please welcome back to the show, Jim Emery. James, good morning, and thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi, Peter. Always good to be on with you.
Yeah, I read your paper, and let's just begin at the beginning. I think most people, and again, most people is an interesting term, but understand Easter is the Christian holiday that celebrates the resurrection of Jesus. Passover is the Jewish holiday that commemorates the liberation of the Israelites, from slavery in Egypt. Now comes Ramadan. I had a long talk. Chuck Bonnewell is one of the smartest guys I know. And
yeah, Chuck's smart. I've talked to him several times.
But he had no idea, and it's not throwing rocks because so many people don't, what is Ramadan about? So I turn it over to you and take it anywhere you want to take it. Speak about the three or speak about Ramadan. James, it's yours.
Okay, well, Ramadan is in the Islamic calendar. First of all, the Islamic calendar is lunar. So Ramadan and other Islamic holidays are celebrated approximately 11 days earlier each year as they go through the cycle. So it can happen throughout the year. And it's to 2 billion Muslims, it's the most sacred month of the year. And it's during the time of Ramadan, the most significant event. There are several, but the most significant is it's believed that's when Muhammad was given the Quran from Allah, by way of Jibril, which in Christianity is referred to as Gabriel. And that happened in about 610 AD in mountains. Jabal al-Nur mountains are just near Mecca. And that's when that occurred. And the key in Islam also is that Muhammad is seen as the last prophet. What Christianity and Judaism and Islam all share many of the same prophets and honor them. And, for example, they go back, as I mentioned, Noah and Abraham, Joseph, Moses, Elisha, Isaiah, and Jesus. And they're with Islamic names, but they are all revered. Muhammad was seen as the last of the prophets. Now, one thing I want to qualify, too, there's a couple of things, really. You'll hear terms, for example, I spent a lot of time over the years in Afghanistan. And while it's called Ramadan in much of the world, that's an Arabic origin, it's pronounced Ramazan in Afghanistan and also Iran and other areas. And the difference there is but either Arabic or Farsi influence. So
it's important because it's, I mean, again, I'm going to interrupt and ask questions and questions, but in Farsi and Persian, and the Iranians are not Arabs. They're not Semites. They're Indo-Europeans, right?
Yes, the linguistic origin is Indo-European.
There you go. And so the language is not, they don't speak a Semitic language, do they?
No. And so that's the difference in the consonants when you get into it. A simple one is well, for example, the noon prayer, which would be Durdar in Arabic, door, door. But if you hear someone pronouncing it Zohar, you know they're probably a Shia.
So who takes Islam into India and in, I mean, these are modern states now, India,
well,
Pakistan.
India, yeah. Some of the greatest leaders, when you look at India, the origin, you have Akbar and Shah Jahan. And Akbar was an extremely good ruler. And you have to, the strength of their quality at ruling is significant because they were a minority ruling a very populous India at that time. And it speaks to the quality of Akbar's rule through Shah Jahan's rule. Shah Jahan, of course, most people know he built the Taj Mahal. 1631 to 1648 for Arjuna Banu Begum, who was Persian, known as Mumtaz Mahal, his favorite wife, after she died. Now, towards the end of his reign, Aurangzeb came in. Aurangzeb imprisoned his father in the Agra Fort, where he could, through the window at that angle, you could see the Taj Mahal. But he was imprisoned, and then he implemented all of these attacks against Hindus and created a lot of turmoil, which led to the downfall of the Mughal Empire.
Come back, because we're running ahead. So Muhammad is meditating, or is that I don't want to.
No, you're right. He was meditating. He was meditating in a cave, and meditation again. And honestly, this goes through all the faiths, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism.
The similarities are incredible, absolutely.
They're very incredible. And the key is, and it's something for people to consider, religions evolve in different areas in response to the terrain and situations in history. And people who follow a religion are basically following the religion of their parents and grandparents and community and ancestors. All religions, the primary focus is to make humans better, to improve them, to make them more spiritual, more kind, more understanding, more discerning instead of more judgmental.
Why do these are the three major Western or Abrahamic religions. I have my own opinion here. Why do these things happen in the spring?
You mean the holidays?
Yeah. I mean, Easter's a spring.
Well, Easter, of course, is spring, and there's a lot of symbolism there. You could go back to the origin of Phoenix, evolving out of the ashes, and spring is evolving, and rebirth, rejuvenation. So those things are all relevant. Now, of course, in Islam, again, because it's a lunar calendar, each year all of the holidays rotate about 11 days earlier. Which for Ramadan, because during Ramadan, Muslims do not drink or any liquids or have any food from sunrise to sunset. And when you get into the summer months, that's an extremely long period
of
time.
But what do we do with Lent? Is there any relationship between, and these are questions, you're the man, but, Lent's a denial. We went through that
Well,
through.
Actually, people would fast during Lent at times. Mm-hmm. People would put ashes on. They would do, and what's interesting, and you hit on something, because also within all the major religions, there's individual sects or denominations. There's 73 sects in Islam, Shia and Sunni are the two biggest. But the fact is there are many different sects and denominations who add their own interpretation, and also beliefs and customs evolve over the years to where they have different type of interpretation with that.
So here's the Prophet Muhammad, and Jibril, Gabriel, comes to him. He's in the cave near Mecca, and what begins?
Basically, it's translated to Muhammad, and then he's asked to repeat it. And so it's told to him, and then he repeats it perfectly. And then once he has that down intact, then he takes out and starts, first of all, with his immediate family. And his uncle played a big role in that.
And that's known, and that's known,
followers.
That's known as the Quran, correct?
Yes, the Quran.
Now, having read Torah, and I've read the Old Testament, and I've read the Quran, and I'm no expert, they tell very much the same stories, don't they?
Many of the stories are the same, because really when you look at, for example, the Torah was the first, and actually I'm going to segue here a little bit too,
sure.
Because even there, for example, when you get into the flood story in the Old Testament, the Torah, and the biblical aspect, that story can be found in Sumerian culture, yeah, with the tales of Gilgamesh.
Everybody's got a flood. Everybody's got a flood. Yeah, no.
Mesoamerica. There's flood stories all over.
Yes.
What's interesting about the Gilgamesh one is the similarity of two of each of the animals releasing the doves to try to find land.
Mm-hmm.
The stories are very similar to what appeared in the Bible. But back to the original question, I segue sometimes just to add to it for people. But the Torah and Christianity and Islam share many of the same stories, many of the mm-hmm. same prophets. The core beliefs are the same. One of the biggest things, for example, and I brought it up in the article, is going back to Abraham, who is seen as the father of all three faiths.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a division there when Abraham, well, first of all, Abraham, the three angels who visit Abraham, you know, and tell him that Sarah is going to have a son, you know, give him a son. But prior to that,
how old are they both at this point?
Okay, well, at the point, for example, and let me digress a moment, and I'll answer that.
Sure.
You had Sarah was barren for decades, so she wasn't having any children with Abraham whatsoever. So Sarah offered her servant Hagar, and Hagar, this is all, everything you have has backstories. Hagar supposedly was a servant they got when they were both living in Egypt. Another story is that Hagar was actually a princess
mm-hmm.
who was converted to Judaism and the true faith and then came with Abraham. But there's a couple stories there. But anyway, Hagar was the servant, and Sarah, who was Sarai at this time, mm-hmm. and Abraham was Abram at this time. That's what they were called. The names were changed later. Offered Hagar as a second wife or concubine. Their interpretation could be vague, you know, to try to for Sarah to have a child through Hagar.
Is it a male?
Doesn't
it have to, or should it not be a male heir?
Well, they wanted a male heir. And so basically Abraham slept with Hagar, and they had a child, Ishmael.
Mm-hmm.
He was 86 years old. Abraham was 86 years old at that time.
Wow.
Now, later on, you had the three angels who, in the biblical story, visited Abraham and told him that Sarah was going to conceive. And Sarah heard it and laughed, and because it seemed foolish at this point. She was a very old woman and had not conceived. This was 14 years after, but 14 years after the birth of Ishmael, Isaac was born of
mm-hmm.
Sarah. Abraham was 100 years old. Sarah was 90 years old at that time. Now, as this evolved, problems, when Ishmael was a teenager then, and then as he aged, Sarah became somewhat jealous and concerned. Ishmael was a firstborn. She didn't want to share the wealth and inheritance with Ishmael,
mm-hmm.
or he would be firstborn and dictate things. And so there were different factors there. This led to Sarah telling Abraham to take Ishmael and Hagar, and they had to leave, and to take them out of the area. And so this, now the Quran has a different, little different version on that. But anyway, the long and short of it, in both stories, actually all the Torah, all three have this, all three faiths,
mm-hmm.
that Abraham took Sarah and Ishmael and took them out into the desert, Beersheba, and they went over and they ended up in Mecca. And that's where they set up a home setting
mm-hmm.
in Mecca. And
Jim Emery's here. He's cultural anthropologist, historian. You can hear he really is a gift, and he's a longtime friend. And he did a really lengthy piece on Ramadan and Passover and Easter. And anybody that's spent any time studying, the similarities are striking. So we come to this moment, and people wonder why. Why is Mecca the holiest of sites, James?
Mecca is the holiest of sites because this is where, and again, there's two different stories on how she got there. This is where Hagar and Ishmael ended up. And they were, obviously, they were in the desert. Abraham had given her a skin of water, if you will, and some food, a bag of food, and they were wandering through the desert. They ended up there, and they thought they were going to perish, and story is Jibril in Islam, or Gabriel in Christianity and the Torah, came down and helped them. And basically, the Zamzam well was discovered. Now, that was a well, and this is near the Kaaba. This is near the Kaaba in Mecca, the most holiest site. So the well was discovered. Another side story is that Gabriel discovered the well. The other story is that Ishmael was digging around and discovered the well. So there's two variations of that. Nevertheless, the well was there. Hagar set up a residency, and travelers came through. Travelers and caravans would always go through there, and they made a point of stopping, you know, because of the well. So she was sustaining herself on the money from that, and prosperous. And also, she was being celibate. She was not remarrying or involving herself with another man. The story is from the Quran that Abraham came back to visit, and that he came back to check on them, and that Abraham and Ishmael built the Kaaba, which is the most sacred building, and they built that as a place of worship for Allah.
And if anybody, if I interrupt, this is with Jim Emery, and if you ever see during Ramadan, and there seems to be literally tens of thousands of people, describe it, Jim.
You have Ramadan, but then you have the Hajj, too. Mm-hmm. Those are two different things. And so the Ramadan, again, is a sacred month, and it's a month of fasting. It's a month of inner reflection and growth, and spiritual growth. And there's aspects of New Year's in the sense that you try to focus and absorb good habits.
I guess I was asking because you set, Sarah and Ishmael, but why is the Kaaba there at Mecca as well?
No, it's there because that's, in other words, that's where the Zamzam well was. That's where Sarah and Ishmael were. Abraham came to visit them there, and at that point, Abraham built the first house of worship for Allah, which was built right there in Mecca, about 60 meters away from the well.
And it's, again, there's places, the similarities are always so striking. So now it's time to sacrifice the firstborn. Let me do this. Let me take a break to do it right. You're doing a hell of a job.
The firstborn really gets into Moloch.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a whole other thing.
But
Hosea put an end to that finally over in Israel.
But it's the beginning, right? Because, again, if the Old Testament is a story that leads to the New Testament, and it's a story upon a story upon a story, the Torah...
Right.
Sorry.
And even the modern days, because Valley of Hinnom, if you go out the Jaffa Gate of the old city of Jerusalem, and the walls of it were built in 1187 by Saladin after he conquered it from the Crusaders. Anyway, to the left there is the Valley of Hinnom. They used to dump garbage and everything else there. But it was also, prior to that, it was where the Moloch temples were set up for the sacrifice of the firstborn. And there's all, and then it was a pivotal point during the 67 war. Where there's battles back and forth there.
Hang on. Jimmy's with us. Put him on hold. Thank you. 696, 1971, the Easter, Passover, Ramadan. The connections in the story. 710 KNUS weather, high 40s today and much the same tomorrow. And sun comes back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. David Ellis, Cherry Creek. I actually saw David yesterday. You heard me talk about taking your valuables to David Ellis Jewelers to get a fortune in cash, secure an appraisal from David for all of your valuables you have tucked away in your home. And it's still true. So share those great reasons. You know, not too far away is high school graduation, people get married. So just in case you don't have a Rolex watch, you don't have rare coins or silver tea sets, go see David Ellis for all of the most meaningful gift-giving occasions. David Ellis Jewelers, just the right item, just the right price for those special people that it means the most to. Antique watches, emerald pendants, gold necklaces, diamond rings, great. But David's been buying precious metals and antiques in Colorado for decades. Dazzling showcases, hundreds of new and used pieces that loved ones will treasure. Visit David Ellis, see for yourself. Look, the black awning on the corner of 3rd and Clayton and Cherry Creek. Explore DavidEllisJewelry.com on the internet and see my friend David. 303-322-8779. 303-322-8779. And tell David Peter Boyle sent you. 3rd and Clayton and Cherry Creek, 6 days a week. DavidEllisJewelry.com. Tomorrow's St. Patrick's Day, and Lou's playing the tunes. Saturday morning, March 16th, 2024, 710 Kane, U.S. Weather Center weather with Peter Boyle's high 40s today, and then much the same tomorrow, and then the sun comes back Monday through Wednesday. Before we go back to just a wonderful guest, Jim Emery, Danny Kaplis's law firm and longtime friend, and did the job, as we say, for my family and everything we were going through. He's the only attorney in Colorado, the only Colorado history, believed to have won five straight multimillion-dollar jury verdicts in major vehicle crash cases. If you have a problem, if something has happened, you call Dan. It's a firm where good people from all walks of life, without regard to ability to pay, or receive the same level of representation only rich and powerful enjoy. He's the man. Longtime friend, Dan Kaplis Law believes that talk's cheap, and experience counts and results matter. The firm would be happy to share with you its track record of outstanding jury verdicts and out-of-court settlements. Dan Kaplis Law believes that who you hire speaks volumes. And they see Danny's name, they know. The firm believes its core values have been the foundation of historic success and faith and integrity and hard work and dedication to right causes. He is my friend. He's the man. If you need help, pick up the phone. 303-770-5551, 303-770-5551, or hit Kaplis Law, CAPLIS Law.com. He has been a longtime friend. He's brilliant. He's been someone that I've learned so much from. Jim Emery, cultural anthropologist, and did a lengthy piece on Ramadan, but it ties into so many other things, and talking about Easter and Passover, and the story is, and again, if Jimmy, you pick it up and run with it, but you have Christian, Jewish, and Muslim scriptures, and the right. And the split comes from Abraham's son is offered for sacrifice, and Muslims believe the sacrificial son is Ishmael, and Christians and Jews believe they trace it back to Abraham's, as they say, Abraham, correct, and his wife Sarah, and that's son Isaac. So I give it to you. Go ahead.
The for anyone following along, if they want, Genesis chapter 21, if you look at that verse 8 through 21, it tells the story from the biblical sense. And a couple things I wanted to clarify. Because Abraham, you know, Sarah wanted Abraham to take Hagar and Ishmael and basically put them out in the desert where survivability would be very limited. And the prospect's not good. Abraham was distressed about this because it was his son, and the angel came to him, which is mentioned here. This is in Genesis chapter 21, verse 12. But God said to him, "Do not be distressed about the boy and your slave woman. Listen to what Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. I will make the son of the slave woman into a nation because he is your offspring." And later in the Bible, it states that Abraham, through Ishmael, will be the leader of a nation, and his 12 sons, which he had 12 sons, will be princes of nations, a potential reference to Arabs and Muslims. And I'm going to segue here a moment, and I'll get back to this, because Abraham also had, after in the Torah, after Sarah dies, the Torah states that Isaac, the son of Abraham, went to Mecca to get Hagar, who was then renamed Keturah in the Torah. And I'll get to that in a moment because it referenced the Aramaic. And that when Keturah came back, Abraham had six more sons with her. And so what you have, when you get into the accounts, and this is certainly mentioned within the Quran and Islamic teachings, but this, basically the offspring of Abraham and Hagar, along with the offspring of Ishmael, when you track them in the lineage, and I know you love history like I do, they migrated into Jordan, into Syria, into all the way to Saudi Arabia, and it's the foundation of the Arab tribes. And this is what Abraham, the reference to that.
Is Abraham Semitic?
Yes.
Yes.
Supposedly. And then the other thing with Keturah, and I'll just explain this for the benefit of the audience. There's a reference. There's a question on whether Abraham had two wives, that's Sarah and Hagar, and Hagar was brought back and became called Keturah, as the Torah says, or whether Keturah was a third woman. There's some debate about that. And the Torah states, of course, that in fact it was Hagar, and Keturah in Aramaic, you always look at root words in different languages. In Aramaic, Keturah means not. And that's the root word for Keturah. It means not, and it was a reference to Hagar being celibate and being truthful and responsible to Abraham, even though she was gone in Mecca and had access to other people. She stayed true to him and then came back. So that's where she got the name from.
So the story occurs in all three, in the Bible, in the Torah, and the Quran. And the Bible and the Torah, Isaac is Abraham's son being offered for sacrifice. Muslim scholars believe the sacrificial son to be Ishmael. It's always interesting because the beginning of Moby Dick, that great line, call me Ishmael.
Yes.
Yeah, he's writing about stuff that when I read Moby Dick as a young man, but when you read Moby Dick as an adult with some understanding, you come away with some certainly different ideas or thoughts. So Ishmael leads to Muhammad. Isaac leads to, if you accept the New Testament, then he leads to Jesus.
The house of David.
The house of David, Jesus. That's right. And Mary and Joseph and the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a well in that story as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told you that story. I visited that well. It's outside of Cairo.
Well of souls.
Yeah, in the Well of Souls.
Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
Sarah offers, then what? So if the Muslims, this is where I get lost. So it leads eventually to this young man in a cave meditating, and he's visited by Jibril, the angel Gabriel.
Right.
And by the way, Salman Rushdie, I was talking about this yesterday. What did Salman Rushdie do with the satanic verses about what was going on? I tried to wade through that book and I got lost in it. What was that really about?
Basically, it's the role of Iblis. Iblis, in other words, Salman Rushdie was making Muhammad to be the devil, and if you look back. One of the other battles that happened during Ramadan is the Battle of Badr. And the Battle of Badr happened in 624, in March of 624, coincidentally. And it's one of the most significant battles in Islam. You had the pagans who were based in Mecca at that time. And actually, they had taken the Kaaba and put idols in it. Just desecrated it. And Medina was the home headquarters, the base for Muhammad and his family and extended family and uncles and all his followers. And so they were carrying out caravan raids against the pagans periodically. And this started as a caravan raid, but then it escalated. And at that time, Muhammad had 333 warriors, and the pagans in Mecca had 1,000 or more. And so it was the first time Muhammad ever had a battle in which it was a pitched battle against the rivals instead of just a hit-and-run insurgency-type operations. So this was very significant. Now, there's a backstory on this as well. Iblis is the devil. Iblis is Satan. And so Iblis was the devil who was encouraging. Iblis was present with the pagan followers in Mecca, and he was encouraging them to fight and go destroy the Muslims and Muhammad. He was encouraging them that he would be with them, he would fight with them, and they couldn't lose, and so on and so on and so on. Then at the same time, you had, you know, Jibril, who actually came down, and Gabriel is very interesting. He's not only an archangel, which means he's
a warrior.
Elevated.
He's a warrior.
He's a warrior. Yeah. He's an archangel, which is a higher elevated person as far as conveying messages for God. But also he's a warrior in defense. Mm-hmm. So Jibril to the Muslims came down with angels who fought alongside Muhammad, and that helped secure the victory. And right before the attack took place, the battle took place, Iblis fled, because Iblis was afraid of Allah and God. And also Iblis knew that it was a win-win. If all of the followers of him, the pagans, died, he'd win. And if they happened to beat the Muslims along the way, it was a double victory.
Mm-hmm.
So Salman switches it around, and he was making Muhammad, you know, the devil. And leading by, in other words, he changed some of those things as far as who was actually driving these forces.
And that's what got Rushdie.
Well, they issued a fatwa against him,
right,
to kill him,
right?
And then he ended up getting attacked savagely, mm-hmm, eventually.
Well, was there a story? And again, this is what's so wonderful about it. Jim Emery's here, cultural anthropologist, and this is the right time to do this. The stories, if you would, of Easter, Passover, and now, of course, Ramadan. And I would suspect many, many people who know the other two don't know Ramadan. And
well, in Judaism, you have Passover, mm-hmm, and also what's interesting is the celebration. Shavuot, which is, you know, the celebration of the Ten Commandments, basically, mm-hmm, when the Torah and the Ten Commandments were given to Moses, that's going to take place, you know, between June 11th and June 13th of this year. And that's sacred to all three religions.
I was going to say that the crossover to me is the similarities. And I've read the Bible, I've read the Torah, and I've read the Quran. Not that I'm a scholar, but mm-hmm, just simply a reader. The similarities are striking, but it really gets back to, and to return to it again, this split that takes place with Ishmael, and Jews and Christians trace their roots back to Abraham, and their son Isaac, and Muslims trace their lineage back to Abraham as well, except now it's Ishmael, whose mother is Hagar, and everything begins or ends there. Fair enough?
Right. You have divergence, and there are other divergence interpretations between the faiths and also within the faiths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the Catholics and the Christians.
Oh, my heavens.
They're divided by a comma.
Yeah.
Merely, you know, Jesus on the cross saying to the thief who... Mm-hmm. You know, one thief mocks him and says, "You're the Christ, save us all." And the other one is reprimanding him, mm-hmm, saying, "He is the Savior. We deserve our fate. He doesn't."
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, "You know, please remember me in your kingdom." And Jesus at that point says, "Verily, verily, I say unto thee today, yeah, comma,
yep,
thou shalt will be with me in paradise."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the comma there means that's the Catholic's version, because now you got to go to purgatory,
mm-hmm,
first. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, comma, today thou shalt be with me in paradise. That's the Protestant version that they go mm-hmm. to heaven right away.
So
no sidebar.
Yeah, no. Christianity in Europe is another whole radio show. But
when you get into Martin Luther and the 95 Theses.
Yes.
And
Henry and Chuck Bonneville and I had this big conversation about
and
Henry.
Most of the theses are about indulgences.
Yeah, selling indulgences. And
right.
What people don't know, that's why you could buy your way into heaven by indulging it wasn't the Vatican, but indulging the Pope.
He was paying off the church.
It was a
I'm going to have a wild weekend here. I'm going to pay you in advance.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to break all the commandments.
So the Hajj is a pilgrimage, and
yes, the Hajj is a pilgrimage, and interesting. You know, when they go to the Seven Hills, what they're doing on the Seven Hills is, and this gets back to the Abraham mm-hmm. Hagar. It replicates Hagar, who was going around to the Seven Hills looking for water so that she and Ishmael wouldn't perish, and that's when Jibril finally came down after she did the Seven Hills. And that's why the Muslims go out there and do that.
So
seven times around.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you see, and it's amazing. I don't know if you can be a non-Muslim and go, but certainly remember Malcolm X in the life of Malcolm. Malcolm goes on the Hajj. And that's when it
changed him.
Absolutely.
It changed him dramatically because... And I've read the autobiography of Malcolm X multiple times. And I read it as a kid, as a teenager, and I got more out of it as an adult, the areas to focus on. But it's a phenomenal book. But number one, he had already had the major split with Elijah Muhammad because of the dalliances with the secretaries and other issues. But the point on part of Elijah Muhammad, not Malcolm, but Malcolm, who was very adamant on his separation between whites and blacks,
meets these white guys.
The similarity. Yeah. Oh yeah. Found the similarity. They're all you have to go through a washing, and then you put on the robe. They all wear the same type of robe, so everybody looks the same. And there's a sanctity and a purity, and it's meant to be a purity of spirit and mind, an intent. And so here he is sharing stories and sharing the experiences with people of all colors. Yeah. And all races and all nationalities, and he came back a changed person, understanding that you truly shouldn't judge people by their skin color, meaning you shouldn't just automatically discount white people because they're white, claiming they can't understand or they can't help.
He meets people from Croatia, he meets, and they're Muslims, and yet they're, they have red hair,
I think.
Yeah, they're...
Malcolm had red hair.
Yeah, but it changes, and that's I think leads to his assassination. Hang on, Jimmy, I need to do something. We'll do a turnaround.
Sure.
I love having Jim Emery here. Our friends at the Black Eyed Pea, locally owned and locally operated. Steve and Michelle, love the place. There's 8 locations, 1 near you. When's the last time you took your family to eat at the Black Eyed Pea? St. Patrick's Day, and this is going on now. It's the Irish Feast, 3-day celebration, started yesterday, goes today, and goes through tomorrow. Tomorrow's St. Patrick's Day. Corned beef and cabbage, slow-cooked overnight, served with 2 sides. You can order pork bangers and smashed potatoes. Or Irish pie or shepherd's pie, maybe a Reuben with sliced corned beef and sauerkraut, Swiss cheese, and Thousand Island dressing, toasted marble rye. Choices are there. Traditional Irish cheer is available as well. They got the Irish Feast going on right now at any of the Black Eyed Peas. Enjoy everything about the restaurant. I know you will. Let them do the cooking for you and keep it in Colorado. They are there 7 days a week. The Black Eyed Pea, blackeyedpea.com. You see the location. The Black Eyed Pea near you. Morning, everybody. Happy St. Patrick's Day. It's tomorrow, the High Holy Days. Saturday, March the 16th, 2024. The weather, 710 KNUS Weather Center. Weather in the high 40s today. Much the same again on Sunday. And then it comes back. It warms up Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Just a tremendous guest. He's been a longtime friend. Jim Emery is our guest. He's a cultural anthropologist. We've been friends for a long time. And he did a piece that it's a lengthy read on Ramadan and Easter and Passover. Invited him on the show, and he really is just a great guest. Let me come back full circle, and we talked about all the beginnings of all of this, and now in the end, and we certain things we do know. How and when does Muhammad die?
Well, as far as how he dies, basically Muhammad dies June 8th, 632 A.D. Now, here's the, and he dies natural causes. But the key after that, when you get into a lot of the issues in primarily the schisms between Sunni and Shia Muslims, it comes out of this. And it comes out of this because Ali was the closest relative, living relative to Muhammad, but he was passed over. He ended up becoming the fourth imam, and there were other imams who became there. And then, you know, Ali was killed, and then it really gets to Ali and his sons, Hassan and Hussein, and, you know, what happened to the three of them that cemented the schism between, and this is where you have the divisiveness between Shia and Sunnis coming out of that. There wasn't a clear lineage set up after Muhammad, and there are different interpretations there.
So when Muhammad dies, but he had a daughter, did he not?
Oh, yes.
But the lineage was to pass through the male.
It's always, it's patrilineal.
Thank you.
Patriarchal society,
And Muhammad had no son.
No.
But the vast majority of Muslims are Sunni. The Shia make up...
Overwhelmingly. Yes.
Did the split begin then?
It began mildly. In other words, Ali was, since there was no clear descent, Ali was the closest relative, and within tribal customs, that would have normally superseded anything else, but it didn't. And he was rebuffed once, then he was rebuffed twice, and he became the fourth imam within Islam. And then, you know, then his sons after, but Ali was assassinated actually near a mosque, you know, and so you had these type of things, which are not unusual for Europe and worldwide, where you have leaders assassinated, early coups. But it evolved from Ali and his sons, where then it became warfare, you know, because the schism grew so much. There was nothing they could agree on at that point.
It's the same thing as actually, it's interesting, again, comparing...
Look at Northern Ireland.
Well, I was going to say that, but look at Europe.
I know you, Peter.
No, I mean, look...
You know that area well.
But look at Europe after Henry and after Luther.
Mm-hmm. Luther.
But does not the same thing then begin in Europe?
Yes, actually, because you had the church trying to hold on to power. You had Protestants, Luther, and then Calvin, you know, and you had other sects evolved, you know, going with that. And so then the religion was a source of monetary, you know, money and control.
Oh, yeah.
And power. And so much of it was about that. I mean, the Pope had a lot of armies. And when you go to Rome and you see that aqueduct going from the, from the Vatican to Castle San Angelo, that where the Pope's armies didn't go too well, he'd run down there and be safe. You know, it's an interesting time historically.
But I always see similarities, and you know, the same thing that's occurring inside of Islam is occurring in Christianity. I mean, Protestants are Protestants because they protest.
Yes.
And what are they protesting? They're protesting
the role of the Pope.
Yes.
And they're protesting primary dogma.
Yes.
Which start indulgences, like I say, the 95 theses, when you read them, most of those, virtually all of them, are about indulgences.
Yeah.
Luther was just consumed by that. You know, that you shouldn't be able to pay for, the wealthy should not be able to pay for their sins and their sordid behavior and get away with it and still go to heaven.
They're also selling relics.
Oh, and they were selling relics. Yeah. Oh, my God. The piece of the cross. There's enough crosses to, for all the crosses that were ever made in the world have been sold. And the relics and the shrouds. Mm-hmm. There's all of these type of things and interpretations. There's other doctrine things and the role of, what happens mm-hmm. to the person if you go to purgatory and the interpretation yep. of Scripture that is in play.
But selling was... The relics were a big factor. Yeah.
The relics and the indulgences. Indulgences were the biggest, and the relics were another factor.
And so they ask Luther to recant, and he won't.
He wouldn't do it.
And that is the beginning of what? The Reformation.
It's the Reformation. Mm-hmm.
And so in England, Henry's...
Coordinated, by the way, and what made that even more possible is the printing press.
Yes.
When you have that evolution taking place.
It takes the power away from the priest.
Mm-hmm.
And the average guy can, if able to read.
Everyone could now read the Bible.
Everyone
could read the Scripture
yes.
and make up their own mind. They weren't dependent upon this person who will interpret what it says for them.
Henry wants his own church so he can get married again.
Church of England.
And that's the Church of England.
Mm-hmm.
And the Reformation really begins in Germany, correct?
Yes.
Comparison analysis.
Wittenberg Cathedral.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be exact, 95 theses were tacked there.
Pin them on the door. So
mm-hmm.
what, in comparison analysis, when is Islam also breaking up into parts?
Well, it broke early. It cracked with Ali and with what happened to Hassan and Hussein. It really split and fragmented. So very early in its history, it fragmented into the two primary denominations. And then those out of that, for example, Alawite is a denomination. Mm-hmm. Alawite is a denomination you think of in Syria. Hmm. Bashar al-Assad, and with the Alawite, but it's part of Shia. It involves some Shia, which is why they also have close ties with Iran.
We were going to do an hour, but can I keep you? I don't know what your day's like or what your morning's like.
No, I can do it, and let me give out something too, if you don't mind, so that people can find the article.
All right,
and all do
it, Jimmy. Do it on the other side, and then we can do it right.
Yeah, I'll do it. All right,
Jim Emery's here. It was going to be an hour, but this is too good. We can open the phone lines up if you wish. If you wish, learn to say that. If you wish, 303-696-1971. I'm fascinated by the topic. Saturday morning, March the 16th with Jim Emery. It is indeed Ramadan and talking about Easter, Passover. And all of this, again, leads to where? 710 KNUS, Denver's talk station. You stay here. High 40s today and then much the same tomorrow. Sun comes back Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I am Peter Boyles. This is Radio Free Denver, good old 710 KNUS.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.